Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. We'll do a meditation at the end today, so if you'll just be in preparation for that. But I'm going to teach a little bit today, and so we speak into this atmosphere and we say, let there be light. I like this phrase right here. This phrase has a lot of energy for me right now. Being is everything. That's what I want to talk about this month, about what it means to be. The full title is Being is Everything, Creating a New Destiny for Yourself Through Self-Transformation. That doesn't sound like a really Christian idea, frankly, because we've been taught in the past, God has a plan. God has a plan for your life, and little by little, he's telling you what that plan is. You're going to figure it out. I haven't completely abandoned that model, but I think if that's what you trust in completely, I think you're doing yourself a disservice and you're misunderstanding why God created after his own kind. Why does Genesis 1:26 say, let us make man in our image and let him have dominion? I remember one time I did a sermon, I might have even been a series, about all the different philosophies of why things happen in our life. You know, there's the one idea. When something happens, somebody says, well, I think everything happens for a reason. A lot of people ascribe to that one. From where I came from, the answer was always God has a plan. God's up to something. And then when things didn't work out like we hoped that God would, we use the Romans 8:28 parachute, all things work together for good to them that love God. So there's the constant... just trying to understand what is life and why do things happen and why does Hugh Hefner live to be 91 and peacefully die in his sleep? You know, wasn't he supposed to have died a horrible death, you know, for all of his debauchery and yet I know really good people that, you know, died in their 30s that, you know... like, there's so many things that don't make sense, and don't even get me started on, you know, what's going on with all the natural disasters, and because everybody's got their whole idea about that. You got people that say, well, it's global warming, and then other people say, I don't believe that's real, or the other people that say, well, if it's real, man doesn't have any connection to that. It's just a phenomenon that happens every 500 years. So there's all, if you don't think there's lots of different ideas, just scroll down your Facebook page. You will find, especially if you have a lot of friends, it's just amazing the array of ideas that people have. And it's surprising sometimes. You know, sometimes you look at everything that everybody says and you say, well, how am I friends with all these people? I don't agree with any of them on anything. And I'm not passionate enough to get into it with you and tell you what I think. I don't know if you saw what I posted last night. I was bored and I just wanted to write, but I was writing the things that I love about social media, which are many. I mean, there are things about it that really are great. And then I wrote the things that I don't love, like I don't like seeing a picture of your infected foot. You know, when you're scrolling down and somebody decides to put 14 pictures of their horrible injury and you're like, oh, my eyes, I can't unsee it. Why? I mean, if you had to, really, do we have to do close-ups and I can't get away? I'm like, Jesus, help me, God. Why did you post this? And I don't like when you like what you're eating and you just want to reach out because you're eating by yourself and you post a picture of it and then people have to tell you, ew, that's disgusting. I would never eat that. Like, that's really rude. You wouldn't walk up to somebody's table and go, ew, gross. It's just like, I didn't ask you. It's not a poll. I didn't say, do you like Brussels sprouts? I don't care. I don't need your, I don't care. So I don't need all that. And I don't like when you've already posted something and there's been days of discussion on it, like 50, 75, 100 comments. And then somebody comes along Has anybody ever heard about, like, yeah, scroll up. We've been talking about it for 2 days. Try to keep up. I don't like that. I don't like when somebody posts a political story that is obviously a hoax or a joke. Like, I saw something, this has been a few months back, somebody, and they put a picture with it, so it looks like a newspaper article. But it was a picture. It said that Starbucks was putting images of Donald Trump on their floor so that people could walk on his face. Well, anybody should have known that's completely bogus, but people that I know that should know better are like, as God is my witness, I'll never drink a drop of Starbucks coffee again. I'm like, you idiot, how do you not know that that's a joke? Are you kidding me? I don't know, I'm pretty sure it's true. No, I'm telling you, I'm a member of the Starbucks cult. That's not even good business sense. Why would you want to alienate? I mean, Starbucks is probably its founder is liberal, I'm sure. But to alienate half of your client base, it's just stupid. And people are like, it's a sign of the times. I'm like, no, you're an idiot. It's a sign that you're an idiot. That's what it's a sign of. Like, I could take one look at fake news and I can tell, oh, that's bogus. That's like, of course that's over the top. Like, all that stuff. Remember all the stuff about people were mad that they'd put rainbows on everything at the White House? That never happened. It was Photoshopped. Like, just stop. So I don't like that. What was my point? Oh, yeah. The fact that people have so many different ideas. And one thing I said about the political stuff, I said, I'm neutral about it. I would never censor anybody. And frankly, I think the discussion is probably healthy, and it's a great thing for a free society. However, we are in a mode of tribalism right now where I don't know that anybody's listening to anybody else on the other side. I mean, I don't. I'm just telling you the truth. I have my own political persuasion. When I see somebody post something that I know I'm not going to agree with, I just scroll on. And probably, if they post a lot about it, I don't unfriend them, but I probably unfollow them just because I don't want to look at that all day. And so if your idea is to win hearts and minds, that's not working. All you do is cause the other side to double down, and you reinforce their stereotypes of you. So, again, I wouldn't tell you not to do it. I'm just saying, think about what it's doing to you, because it may not be giving you the results that you want. Anyway, I guess I'm saying all that to say, you know, our year of living your best life this month is be yourself. But the question is, well, then who am I? As we've talked about before, there's some things about yourself that you don't know until you get older. I mean, you just don't. There's a reason why you got to watch for your kids and your teenagers about peer pressure, because while you're still trying to figure out who you are, it's so easy for influential people with strong personalities to fill in the blank for you. There's so many things that kids get into that they don't even want to do, but it's the idea to be popular. It's the idea of, you know, any number of things. And we, you know, on some level, we were all there. Then when you get older, hopefully, if you age appropriately, you get to where you kind of start thinning it out a little bit. Like, well, I don't like that, and I don't want to do that, and I don't want to dress this way, and I don't believe that, and I don't want to listen to this kind of music, and this is what I really like. And, it's a great thing to finally be who you are and be okay with who you are. Now, let me say this before I show you. I'm going to show you this scripture in two different translations. This may sound like a contradiction in terms, but I want you to hear it with your spirit. I do believe there's something to becoming another person. I think that is possible. I think the caterpillar can become the butterfly. I have come to the conclusion that you can't change until you like who you are now. Now, the conventional wisdom was, I can't lose weight until I hate my fat body. I don't think that's true anymore. I think you have to love who you are, like you are, and once you embrace that reality, you can change the reality, which is why I'm saying creating a new destiny. When there's this idea that there's this destiny that's out there for you and there's nothing you can do about it, there's something about that. I don't like the way that makes me feel. I don't. That doesn't make me want to explore that destiny. I'd much rather believe that God has given me the ability to create my own destiny. Like, for instance, there's some people that say, well, when it's your time, there's nothing you can do about it one way or the other. Well, that's not true. I mean, you could, if it's not your time, you could still walk in front of a bus. You know, like, I see people that I think have died out of season all the time. So I am going to talk about change this month, but I'm not talking about hating or even disliking who you are. As a matter of fact, I believe your understanding of why you are like you are is the key to unlock the next incarnation of yourself. As long as you keep hating what currently is, it's like Moses and the Israelites going around Sinai over and over again, and you never get out of it. There has to be an internal acceptance before there can be an internal change. Are y'all with me on that? All right. I've showed you this scripture before, but I think it's, for my purpose this month, I want to show it to you again. Now, this is Matthew 5:5. This is in the Beatitudes. In the King James Version, which was what we're traditionally used to hearing, it says, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Now, that in itself is a very interesting topic, because most of the other Beatitudes are about heaven, about, you know, theirs is the kingdom of heaven, you'll be called the children of God, whatever. Interestingly, he says, the meek shall inherit the earth. That's one of those mysteries, one of those really easy things that Jesus said that I personally find confounding. Like, what do you mean by that? And I think there's something to it, and I want to look into it this month. But interestingly, when the Message Bible, I'm trying to think, what's his name? The guy that, Peterson. When he did this, technically it's a paraphrase translation, it's tomato, tomato. This is how he interprets, and I've shared this with you numerous times, but it's just interesting that this is how it got interpreted. He says, you're blessed when you're content with just who you are, no more and no less. That's the moment you find yourselves proud owners of everything that can't be bought. Now, I was meditating on that, like, that's interesting. How did you get, I'm sure he went into the original Greek and found nuanced implications in the original language. Why did the Elizabethans in the 1600s interpret that as blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. And in modern times, this guy translates it as you're happy, you're blessed when you're content with just who you are. I was taught in Bible college that the definition of meekness was strength under perfect control. Like I could kill you, but I choose to, you know, hold back the strength. So my meekness is not a sign of weakness, it's a sign of discipline. But my question is, what does he mean by that, the meek shall inherit the earth? Now, a lot of times when the images of heaven and earth are used, they're really talking about spirit and body. Like when Jesus said, let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven, to an Eastern mindset, what he was really saying is let your will be done in the external man as it is in the internal man. He really wasn't. Those people weren't, even modern day Jews don't really talk that much about heaven and that sort of thing. They, you know, their ideas of the afterlife are vague. So we think that Jesus was talking to them about gates of pearl and streets of gold. That wasn't in their consciousness at all for first century Judeans. They didn't even think like that. So when he said, let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven, he was saying, let the internal affect the external. Now, this is interesting. This is in the Jonathan Mitchell New Testament. And this guy, you know, he's very wordy, but he's a very precise Greek linguist. This is how he interprets it. The kind, considerate, gentle, mild-tempered, humane, and nonviolent folks, people who do not use force, are happy and blessed because they themselves will proceed to be inheriting the land or be receiving and enjoying an allotment of the earth. Now, I've just thought about this all day yesterday. Like, why did Jesus say that? Blessed are the meek, or blessed are they who are themselves. If I were trying to marry the idea of meekness as strength under perfect control with be yourself, you know what the equation would be for me? I don't have to prove anything. I can be meek. I can let a soft answer turn away wrath. I can turn the other cheek, not because I'm weak, not because I'm afraid of you, not because I'm afraid of confrontation. I just don't need to prove anything to you. You can't be meek until you're comfortable in your own skin. Because as long as you've got an axe to grind, a point to prove, a score to settle, a chip on your shoulder, you still aren't yourself. Have you ever met somebody that it's like everything they say is filtered through this lens of victimization? Everything they say, you can just hear it. It's like it's always, somebody's always getting ahead. It's always, somebody's always got the break but me and whatever. And my feeling about that, there are victims in the world. We've all been victimized by different things. But if your mentality becomes that of a victim, you really don't see reality anymore. And everything you hear is filtered through that prism. You don't even know what reality is, and you sure don't know who you are. I don't know how they prove this, but one thing that Dispenza said at his workshop, it was something like 50% of things that, I think it was 50% of things that people tell from their past never even happened. And I don't know, how would you even measure that? But I know, like in my family, different stories that we've all told over the years, I've heard how they've all kind of morphed. I remember a relative of mine telling a story from his childhood, and I said, that didn't happen to you, that happened to me. And he said, no, that was me. I said, no, I'm telling you, that was me, and you heard me tell that story. He says, no, I'm pretty sure that was me. I was like, you're crazy, that was me. And nothing doing. He was like, he just sort of taken my childhood and said, no, that was me. Several things have happened lately with different people that have retold things. I think that's not the way that happened at all. But, you know, the further you get away from the actual happening of it, you know, details get muddled and they get changed or whatever. So I thought, well, that's really interesting that you could be, if that is true, what if you are going through all this unnecessary pain from something that you perceived as victimization that wasn't victimization at all? Maybe that's not what they meant at all. Wouldn't that really stink if you got to the end of your life and realized that you spent the whole time mad at something that never really actually happened? I'm always amazed at that idea that somebody could be under an illusion. I've used this analogy before. I know Gone with the Wind is politically incorrect, but I just passed Margaret Mitchell's house on the way over here, and I was stopped at the red light, and there's the window, because she wrote the book right there. She sat in the window and wrote it, so I was thinking about it, and I thought it was interesting how she wrote the book, aside from the controversy about what people perceive about how she thought about slavery. Her, just from a novel's standpoint, she wrote a ridiculously flawed antagonist and a ridiculously perfect protagonist. The whole point of the story was it was really about Melanie versus Scarlett. And the idea is that Scarlett had no redeeming qualities whatsoever, which is unrealistic, and that Melanie has no flaw in her, which is unrealistic. You know, at some point, you know, when Scarlett caught kissing your husband, she's supposed to want to smack her, not, "Our darling Scarlett's here at the party." You're like, Melanie, get a clue. She would kill you for your husband. But then you remember when Melanie dies? I know I've said this before. Melanie dies and Ashley's really crying about it. And Scarlett goes, "Why, you really do love Melanie, don't you?" And we're like, yeah, that's what they've been trying to tell you the whole movie. She goes, "Well, all this time I've been believing a falsehood." We're like, exactly. And Clark, you're about to blow it with Clark Gable's at home in your bed right now, and you're moping over, who played him? Leslie Howard? It's Scarlett, we need to talk, baby. You need to forget that old English guy in a heartbeat. You got Clark at home waiting for you. And now you blew it. You waited too long. Because frankly, my dear, he don't give a damn no more. But the thing is when you look at that, you think, wow, how many people are going through their life under a delusion of something that's just not even true? And it's their perception. Over the years, long before social media, I remember always marveling at what people would hear out of a sermon. Like the feedback that people would give me, I think, wow, that's what you got out of that? I'm glad that you got blessed by it, but that's not all what I was talking about. But okay, if it worked for you, okay. But that's interesting that that's what you heard. Even this week, I posted something. I meant it to be realistic, but positive. Because my dad, you know, he's kind of, I mean, his diagnosis is real. And my mom had told me all during the week that she says, I can't make him understand who died. He keeps asking, now who died? And he doesn't understand. So when Ken and I went there last Sunday night, I didn't know what to expect. I drive up in the driveway, Dad's standing out there waiting, and he's completely lucid. He got it that day. When he saw Ken, he hugged him and said, I'm so sorry about your loss. And it was like, to me, it was a really special moment, you know, that we had this moment of clarity. It was very meaningful to Ken. It was very meaningful to me. He had a card for him. He had money for it. It was just like, wow, that would have been appreciated anyway. But right now, that was really appreciated. It was amazing how people heard it. People thought I was like making a post about Alzheimer's. That wasn't my point. My point was, in the midst of everything that he's going through, I guess I should have made the point clearer. When it comes to real relationships, people will connect with a moment of clarity. And that's what I was saying. It was a snapshot, a mental snapshot I wanted to hold on to. And some people were writing such negative stuff, I just had to delete it. Like, oh my God, you have no idea what you're in for. It's going to be horrible. I went through with my mother for 9 years. I'm like, kind of not the point. Kind of not the point of the post. It was supposed to have been, oh wow, what a beautiful story that in the midst of this thing, you had this moment of like a real moment that you want to remember. And you think, wow, it's so interesting how people hear things. Like, that's not, I didn't say, I'd like to start a discussion forum on your horror stories of what happened with your parents with Alzheimer's. I'm like, yeah, I know what Alzheimer's is. I know. Ken's mom had it. She died from it. We know. I think that's in the Bible somewhere. I think it says stupid is a stupid death. No, but it's just interesting, like, wow, how did you pick that up from what I was saying? It's just interesting to me how people don't hear things. And let me tell you, you better get used to this. If you're really tuned in and you really do listen, you're going to have a problem with people that don't get it. I remember being with a group of ministers, and we were talking about analogies and preaching, whatever. And I was saying, somebody mentioned some movie or something. I said, yeah, I refer to movies a lot. I said, personally, I think when you refer to pop culture, especially movies or television that people know what the story is about, it's kind of the modern day equivalent to Jesus giving parables, because he was speaking to an agricultural society. So when he talked about planting and harvesting and sowing and reaping, those people could relate to it. When I talk about something and I mention a movie, you know what you get the point because you're familiar with the story. And I said, like, really, The Wizard of Oz has got probably, I could preach probably 30 sermons out of that. Well, they fell on the floor laughing. They're like, Wizard of Oz, how could you? I said, really? You don't get that? It's a very powerful parable about not knowing who you really are, and that it's going through trials that reveals that you think you don't have a brain, but you actually do. And I said, oh my God, there's so many things I could, even about self-actualization, and she had to learn it for herself, and there's no place. I mean, those are like very powerful principles. These guys are like, yeah, but that wasn't even real. That was like a fairy tale. You guys are, what are they, stupid? That's the real title this month. I thought, how do you not see the potential, like all true art actually says something. And so, you know, when I see a movie, I want to know, well, what is that saying? What's the human condition that I can relate to? Because it's, you know, the human story is all of our story. I mean, there's things about everything that, you know, when it's love, betrayal, life, death, ambition, all these things, these are things that we can all empathize with. But you have to learn, like, wow, there's a lot of people that just really don't get it. You're really tuned in to a very different frequency than I am. And I'm not saying that I think everything has to be unnecessarily meaningful. Some things are just funny or entertaining or whatever. But there is, I will say this, there's a, when something is funny, it's funny because it's got a kernel of truth in it. If it's not based somewhat in reality, that it doesn't register. Let me show you this quote. Parker J. Palmer says, "Before I can tell my life what I want to do with it, I must listen to my life telling me who I am." Now that, very simple statement, very profound. How do you listen to your life? Well, when you notice a pattern keeps occurring, when the same thing keeps happening, when you're in a relationship where you say this, they say that, you're in a cycle, nothing ever changes. Even the idea that sometimes it's not even the situation that you're addicted to, but it's you feel like yourself with the negative emotion that you get from it, so you're actually, don't even realize it, but you're addicted to that negative emotion. Like have you ever noticed somebody that'll just make the same mistake in relationships over and over and over and over again? And you think, wow, you're the one constant in this. Like I've seen, particularly I've seen women who have gone into a series of abusive relationships. And you think, it's not that I'm blaming her. I want to say, why do you keep going back into that cycle? Because there's something, let's find out what that is. Because until we get that resolved, you're going to keep trying to scratch this itch and nobody can find it. And so you have to listen to your life. Listen to a lot of the changes that, even part of the reason why I birthed Metron is I was listening to my body. I saw things that were happening in my physical body. I thought, this shouldn't be happening. I mean, I'm a healthy man. Why am I having these reactions? And it made me have to really look at what do I really want? Jonah remembers. Jonah may have even been the one who asked the question, but I know Avery was there. When we nearly bought the building there in Covington, we could have done it. And I finally thought, well, maybe it's the right thing to do. I mean, when am I going to have this opportunity to buy something? And these people have stayed with me, so I guess this is what I should do. And finally, somebody said, "Do you really want to buy this building? Like, honestly, do you really want to buy this building?" And all of a sudden, something came out of me that surprised me. I was like, "No! No, I don't want to buy this building. I don't want to ever drive back to Covington for the rest of my life. I mean, it's just like, I come out here because I want to, y'all, so all y'all can have a job. I don't ever want to come here again. My season here is over." And everybody was like, "Wow, that was," and I was surprised because I was so used to, this is what I'm supposed to say, this is what I'm supposed to say. And it was, and everything changed from that conversation. Even Jonah's mother, Debbie, said, "You know what, life's too short. You need to go do what you really want to do." And it was like, oh, thank you. That was all I needed to say? I'm like, thank you. And that meant that affected everybody at that table. It meant that they're all out of a job now. But everybody knew, like, you can't keep going like this. And so sometimes you have to, I'm not saying that all sickness and disease comes from an emotional thing, but a lot of it does. And if things are happening to your physical body, you need to pay attention to them. You need to know, why does this keep happening to me? Why am I? I mean, I don't know if meditation has done this for you, but it has done this for me. It does make you, it kind of takes the lid off your subconscious, and it makes you examine a lot of things. You don't even realize, you think, wow, really just that little sitting there quietly for 10 minutes? Yeah, if you shut your brain down, the subconscious, interestingly, has a lot to say. and some things that it would like to get resolved. Sometimes it's trying to, your subconscious is trying to speak to you through your dreams and stuff. And then when you begin meditating, it's like, wow, all kind of things are coming out of there. But you shouldn't be afraid of it. It's actually good. I don't know about you, but I want to make sense of my life. I want it to matter. I want it to have some kind of poetry to it and have a beginning, a middle, and a nice resolution. I want the third act to be really special. And more than anything, if you get to the third act and you still aren't yourself, that's just really sad. At a certain age, you should be able to be with who you want to be with, marry who you want to marry, divorce who you want to divorce. And I'm not advocating divorce. I'm just saying you're not getting any younger. That's all I'm saying. And being happy is important. Or just hating your job. You can't get in the car every day of your life and hate your job. Now, I do believe until the better one comes along, you need to love it and be grateful for what you have. But with the light at the end of the tunnel is, I'm going to be grateful for this, but the gratitude is a bridge to the next reality. Because I can't live like this. There's these homeless guys that sometimes sleep under the underpass next to my building. And I look at them, not if it's cold out, it's a different thing, but when just on a regular day, not that I envy them in any way, but I look at them and I think, wow, your stress is so different from other people's stress. I mean, this guy's not, he's not worried about how to pay his taxes. I'm not advocating for homelessness, I'm just saying, you think, wow, you really, you're literally thinking where your next meal is going to come from. Like, that's your only, you probably don't really have an opinion about politics, you're not worried about taxes. You know, it's like, that would be really interesting if you opt out of, if you get off the grid, there's so many things you wouldn't have to deal with. Now, when it's 30 degrees outside, you want to be in the grid. That's why you hope that you've kept all your payments up so that heat comes on and light comes on and nobody kicks you out of your house. That's optimum. But you also know, wow, it's a lot to keep it, just keeping life going. It's a lot to it. Now this next, only at Metron do you have a Bible verse followed up by a quote from a communist, but just stay with me. Because I think it's interesting that what this guy says, well, he's more of a Marxist actually. But I think it's interesting what he says sounds so much like something Jesus would have said. He says, if other people do not understand our behavior, so what? Their request that we must only do what they understand is an attempt to dictate to us. If this is being asocial or irrational in their eyes, so be it. Mostly they resent our freedom and our courage to be ourselves. We owe nobody an explanation or an accounting as long as our acts do not hurt or infringe on them. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. How many lives have been ruined by this need to explain, which usually implies that the explanation be understood, i.e. approved. Let your deeds be judged, and from your deeds, your real intentions, but know that a free person owes an explanation only to himself, to his reason and his conscience, and to the few who may have a justified claim for explanation. Now, I can support that from the scriptures. What are you feeling that one, Danny? Oh, did y'all have some victory back there? that's beautiful. I don't care who said it. I don't care if Karl Marx himself said it. That's a beautiful statement. Say, it's not, I mean, you can't live apart from society. So you can't just say, you know, I'm going to run this red light, you know, because somebody's going to say, no, you're not. So there's a certain amount of conforming that you have to do to be able to live in society. But when it comes to your own life choices, you have to thine own self be true. And there's always going to be somebody who doesn't get it, doesn't like it, wants to impose their viewpoint on you. And that is one reason it's good to be exposed to a lot of different ideologies, because, like, I don't know if you're this way, but I'm shocked when somebody doesn't have the same worldview I have. I mean, mine seems so logical to me. I think, how do you not how do you not see that? That's so obvious. How do you not know that? But I realized, well, they've had a different set of circumstances. Their life is, you know, they have a different way of looking at things because of a lot of things. Their DNA, where they were raised, their parents, their culture. I mean, there's a zillion things that work to make you have the worldview that you have. So at a certain point, you have to say, well, I'm figuring it out myself, and as soon as I know the next revelation about me, I'll let you know. But you need to know that people don't like when you change. I posted this a few weeks ago. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Midnight Express. I've referred to it before. It's somewhat based on fact about the guy that started Amnesty International. He was busted in Turkey, I think, for trying to smuggle out hashish. So he gets thrown in this Turkish prison, and it's horrible. It's every prison stereotype you can imagine. And then a thing happens, and it's very R-rated. Don't take the kids. But there's a point where he now has been put into the mental ward of the prison. And when he gets put, it's like going into hell. And when he's down there, all these men, all they do all day long is they walk around, they kind of just walk like zombies around this one big pillar. And I guess it must be a Muslim thing. You're supposed to walk from, I don't know, east to west or something like that. Whatever it is, that's what they do. And that's all they do all day long. It's just like, Well, this thing happens where his girlfriend comes to see him, and it's kind of a very R-rated encounter. But the point is, something about her visit to him snaps him out of this funk, because he's becoming one of these guys and looks horrible, long hair, and, you know, it's like Night of the Living Dead. And she says, oh, Billy, you've got to get a grip. And something about that snaps him out of it. And all he does, it's a very simple thing, but it's one of the most powerful cinematic images I've ever seen. He walks back down and starts walking the other direction. Well, the other guys are like, ugh, and they're all like pushing him like, you're not supposed to walk that way. And just that one simple act of him walking the other way is what changes his brain chemistry and ultimately gets him out. It's so powerful. Every time I see that one thing where Brad Davis was the actor, he's pushing these guys, and they will take his shoulders and try to move him back. Like, no, you're supposed to walk this way. And he intentionally walks the other direction. It's just a very powerful image of what it means to resist change or resist the norm that's trying to be forced on you. And probably every one of us at some time or another has had to change directions of walking around the pole in the crazy house. Because we've all been in something somewhere that's like, this is crazy. I can't live like this. I'm living with crazy people. And I'm not, don't email me about mental illness. I think you know what I'm talking about. Everybody's partaken somewhat of mental illness. I mean, we've all had our moments, okay? But I like this idea of not, I don't really read defiance in this. I read authenticity. It's like I'm not even trying to make you be who I am. I'm just saying this is who I am. And I have learned this, and I can tell you, you know, next week will be the 7th anniversary of me publicly coming out. And I know that in these 7 years, what I have seen happen is when people realize the new normal, they adapt to it. They're like, okay, this is the new normal. Okay, we get on board with it. Or they move on. But once you make certain changes in your life, certain declarations, it's like driving a stake in the ground. And the people who are in your life are going to have to adapt to it one way or the other. If, however, you don't know who you are, what you should do, people will be all too happy to tell you who you are and what you should do. And sometimes they don't know. So, I mean, if you really want to get deep about the Wizard of Oz, we're all the characters and we're all the wizard too. We're, you know what I mean? It's like we have to be the ones to tell our own selves, you already got this. You already are fine just like you are. And whatever change may come or may even need to come is going to come because I get my arms around this present reality just as I am. Just as I am. You don't have to qualify a statement with, well, this is only my opinion. Well, your opinion's valid. If you don't think it's valid, then don't say it. There's nothing. Can I just say there's nothing wrong with you? Nah, you don't know me. Look, everybody's got stuff that they don't want other people to know about. But ultimately, you're okay. That was worth you driving. You know, I remember, for whatever you think about the Reverend Al Sharpton, I thought this was kind of a powerful moment at Michael Jackson's funeral. Because Michael Jackson, you know, come on, he was a megastar, but also there was a lot that went with that. And, you know, his kids, they don't have any control over who he is. I mean, they're, you know, that's their only reality. And I remember, as only Reverend Al could say, he said, I want to say something to you kids. Ain't nothing wrong with your daddy. Your daddy's fine. And I thought it kind of felt, well, it was kind of empowering for him. I'm sure if I were Michael Jackson's son, that wouldn't be meaningful to me to have somebody say, oh, you mean he was okay? Okay, thank you, because that's my dad. It's good to once in a while find out, oh, I'm okay. I may need some improvement. If I make a mistake, and I can apologize. But you're not your behavior. I mean, if you have a bad day or you say something you shouldn't have said, it doesn't mean you're a bad person. I remember, I don't think Fred will mind me saying this, but he had not an altercation, but somebody said something to him in traffic, a situation that happened that could have gone badly. And he was kind of beating himself up about it. I said, why? I said, I would have been really mad about that. I probably would have reacted more than you did. And he was like, really? He said, because I've really beat myself. I said, uh-uh. You completely, as your pastor, I'm telling you, you were justified to be. I said, now I think you did the right thing by driving on, because that could have gone very badly for you. But as far as you're being angry, I'm angry just hearing about it. You don't mind me telling it. But he actually needed somebody to say, no, there's no, you don't need to even give that one another thought. If anything, pat yourself on the back that you were controlled enough, meek enough, if you will, to move on to say, it's not worth it to get involved with what's going to go down in this thing here to prove a point. But I'd like to enter it into the record that I'm really ticked off about this. Like, okay, fine. Choose your battles. Do you know what I mean? There are some battles that are completely justified, but it's not going to be worth it. What's going to transpire from the fallout from it? Y'all with me? All right, let's wrap this up and then we'll meditate. Dr. Joe says this, I like this. It says, so if we want to change some aspect of our reality, we have to think, feel, and act in new ways. We have to be different in terms of our responses to experiences. We have to become someone else. We have to create a new state of mind. We need to observe a new outcome with that new mind. All right, well, what are you saying? Are we saying, you're saying be yourself, you're fine like you are, but now you're showing me this quote that says be somebody else. I'm saying it's all the same thing. Hear me with your spirit. When something happens to you that may be negative, but it actually serves as a touchstone for you to see how far you've come, then you need to be grateful that that thing happened. You understand what I'm saying? It's very empowering to say, you know what? If this had happened a year ago or 5 years ago, this thing would have gone down entirely differently. But this is a chance for me to even show myself how much I am becoming something different. And so I'm learning to think in a new way. When things change dramatically, you have to learn to think differently. Remember when, Psalm 126, when the Lord turned the captivity of Zion, we were as them that dreamed. These are people who had been in slavery for, 400 years? And once their captivity was turned, they didn't know how to think like free people. Or Nehemiah 8:10, the joy of the Lord is your strength. That's he said that to them because they had been in Babylonian captivity and didn't know how to rejoice anymore. Remember, he says, go home and have a party. Celebrate your freedom. King James says, eat the fat and drink the sweet. And they all burst into tears. They're like, we don't know how to party anymore. And he says, the joy of the Lord is your strength. In other words, go make yourself celebrate. I'm watching Ken go through it right now because, you know, he's been, especially this past year, when he stays with his dad, which is most times, it's, you know what it's like when you've got a sick person right across the hall from you and you never fully sleep. You don't, you know, you're always on edge. You get up several times during the night. And I can tell he's having to learn a whole new way to be now because that's not a, and even me, I mean, last weekend, three different times, I stopped myself from saying, have you talked to your dad today? Because I'm so used to saying, have you checked on him yet? How's he doing? Whatever. And when there's a change, you have to say, oh, we've got to open a new neuropath now because that's not the reality. And it takes a while. You can't force somebody to get that overnight. That's why with him, and he may be watching right now, I'm just like, well, take your time. It'll get better. I mean, it will get better. And there's only so much I can empathize with you because I haven't been through it yet. I mean, I'm around people passing all the time, but it hasn't been my parents yet. So I haven't been there yet, but I can wait with you 1 hour outside while you sweat your drops of blood and, you know, get through it. Many of you have already been through it. It's just part of the process. And what you're supposed to take out of it is, wow, life's really short. I need to make it count. I don't need to waste time on stuff that's going to waste another day. I mean, I need to every day. That was kind of the reason I posted that thing about my dad the other night, is because I'm so aware of what time I have left with him as him that every time it is really like him, it's like I want to memorize it. I want to freeze frame it because I don't know if that's going to be the last time. Some of you, I'm not trying to bring the room down. I'm just saying that's the way that I have to look at it. Everybody has to look at it that way. Let's finish this up. This is Romans 12:2. You know, it's King James is, be not conformed to this world, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Here in the Message, I like he says, don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what he wants from you and quickly respond to it, unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down to its level of immaturity. I love that line. God brings the best out of you, develops well-formed maturity in you. And again, there's a certain amount of conforming that we all have to do to the culture. Then there's also a part of it we have to say, no, I'm not going to think that way. Just because everybody else says this is the way to think, I'm going to think for myself. And I believe, this will be the last time I'll quote Dispenza today, but this really resonated with me because I have said this very thing. I said it here at Metron one time a few months ago. Maybe he was streaming and he stole this from me. I said there was a time when people who did things differently got shot and killed. The Kennedys, Dr. King, Malcolm X, John Lennon, people who thought differently and were not afraid to say it. There's always somebody somewhere that wanted to shut them up. Remember even when Joseph's brothers, they said, let us kill the dreamer and see what becomes of his dream. But I believe there's a new reality now where people who think outside the box are going to survive. They're going to live. They don't have to die as martyrs. Frankly, please hear this with apolitical ears. You know what? After Obama's second term, you know my first thought? Thank God he got through 8 years and nobody shot him. I mean, I just thank God. I mean, I don't know if that was the right thing to think, but I was like, whew. Because there was a part of me that was always like, Dear God, please don't let that happen. Not that I want it to happen to any president, but especially with the way things are now, like, Jesus, that would just be like the end of, that would be so bad. That's why during his campaign, he kept making references to Abraham Lincoln. I'm like, ixnay on the inkinlay. They shot him. Stop drawing those comparisons. Call yourself FDR or somebody. Don't go, or Reagan or something. Anyway, but I do believe the new world is coming, and listen, it's not an easy birth. There's a new world being birthed, and the labor is intense. I mean, it's intense. I wish I could tell you it's an easy birth, but it's not. It's frankly a breech birth, and it's kind of coming in backwards, but it will be birthed in. It will be. And those of us who see a new world are not going to have to die for it. I truly believe that. I think the age of martyrdom is over. I don't think it accomplishes anything anymore. So, new reality. Can you all agree with that? All right. And then, thank you for that very tepid patty cake. Yeah, we think we agree, but we don't know. We were kind of half listening, so I'm not sure. Did I agree with that? I don't know. It's like, what point is he on? I don't know. Just clap and he'll be over quicker. I can read your mind. I know what y'all are thinking. Just for that, I'm doing 20 points. finally, you must, this is interesting. You must give up the life you planned in order to have the life that is waiting for you. Now, there's different ways to interpret that. Some people would say, oh, well, then God's got a bigger idea. Look, I'm not taking God out of the equation. I understand Ephesians 3:20. He does more than you can ask or think. I know Jeremiah 29:11. I know the plans I have for you. I know all that. But I also know that there's some things I've prayed for in my life that I'm glad I didn't get. You know, on down the line, it was like, thank God that didn't get answered. Because that's not what I... Don't you remember Garth Brooks has that real famous song, Thank God for Unanswered Prayers? He ran into a high school girlfriend that he had prayed that he was going to marry. And then when he saw her years later, he was like, oh my God, I'm so glad that prayer didn't get answered. And that's why I used to tell you, like, write your goals, but write them in pencil, because there may be a, you know, you have, need to have a general idea. But I see this happen with a lot of single people who say they want to find somebody, but what they're looking, I hear them talking, I think the person you're looking for doesn't exist. I think you've made the parameters so extreme that that person doesn't exist. And if they did, I'm not sure they're going to want to get with you. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to have a general idea of what you want, but maybe a little flexibility. I'm not even going to repeat that one. Anyway, I'm going to leave it. We're going to get deeper into this next week, but let's, before we go today, I don't think anybody's going to be coming in this late, so you don't have to guard the door so much, but I do want to do a meditation, and our meditation today will kind of be a Selah. Let's bring the lights down. Go ahead and close the door, just in case, and I don't want any photography during. I think most of you have been here through a meditation, but let me, in case you haven't, let me just kind of get you ready for this. Please sit up straight. Please put both feet on the floor. As much the more you can align your spinal column, the better. What do we have? We have about a 10-minute one. Okay. That's good. We'll just do one today. And thanks. Well, light a candle then. I won't ask who has a lighter. May not work. I don't know. Oh, you better get. Yes, yeah. She knows me. If you can't empty your lap, the idea is you want to get everything in a flow. You don't have to close your eyes, but you're probably going to want to. And the whole thing is really about breathing more than anything else. So, Charles, if you'll start that, I'm going to walk you through some breathing. And gradually you'll move away from my voice. Preferred mode of breathing for me is inhale through your nose, hold it for a few seconds. Exhale through your mouth. That may not be realistic for everybody. Whatever works for you, just make sure it's consistent. If you can, inhale through your nose and exhale through your mouth, that's optimum. The idea is you don't want to think about anything. Don't worry about your thoughts. If they run around a little bit, just gently pull them back in and just only focus on your breathing. Inhale. Hold it. Exhale. Inhale. Hold it. Exhale. Keep sitting up straight. Just be conscious of your breathing. If the music takes you somewhere, that's fine. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale. Exhale. Concentrating in your breathing, just be yourself. However you interpret that, be you. Be the real you. Embrace the real you. Love the real you. Forgive the real you. Honor the real you. Keep breathing. Self-centered. Breathing. Stay consistent with your rhythm of breathing. It's all about your breath. Breath and spirit are the same thing. Thank you. exhale out of your mouth, exhale out of your body, out of your internal organs, out of the tips of your fingers, the ends of your toes, the ends of your hair, the top of your head, out of your eyes, out of your ears. Exhale completely. Exhale out of your soul. Exhale out of your spirit. Exhale out of your being. Exhale out of your essence. Exhale out of your past. Your past self. Self, your future self. When you get to that place that you're not thinking about anything, you become timeless. You're in the now. You're aware. You're conscious. Yourself.